This is an Equity Mates Media podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services License 540697.
Equity Mates!
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to Equity Mates Investing, a podcast where we explore what's possible in the world of investing. If you've just joined us for the first time, a huge welcome to the Equity Mates community. My name is Bryce, and today we are digging into all things private equity. As always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you?
I'm very good, Bryce. Very excited for this episode. Private equity has been an asset class that has just gone from strength to strength, really. The numbers of people, numbers of assets, like the amount of money flowing into that space. It's been pretty amazing. It's an asset class that traditionally has been pretty inaccessible for people like us, but you've seen it in like the allocations of the big endowments and the big super funds, more and more private equity, and I mean, you see it in the returns. So I'm excited for this episode because we're speaking to someone from really the OG of private equity in Australia, and that's Pacific Equity Partners.
Yeah, Australasia's largest private equity firm, and we are lucky to welcome to the studio Cameron Blanks, who is Managing Director at Pacific Equity Partners and has been at the firm since 2002. Plenty of experience in private equity, having been spun out of the Bain & Company. And we're going to be having a chat today about the power of private equity markets and the role that Pacific Equity is playing in making it a little bit more accessible, and some of the deals and, I guess, areas that are exciting for Cameron and the team at the moment.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about their Pacific Equity Partners Gateway vehicle. It's a new vehicle that they're creating that makes this world more accessible. I don't think we can say accessible full stop, because there still is a minimum investment. I think it's $50,000. Mm. But compare that to traditional private equity vehicles where the minimum investment might be $500,000 and up. It does make it more accessible for a lot of people. But it's important to stress that whilst we are licensed, anything you hear isn't financial advice. And if you are interested in the Gateway product, do your own research. The best place to do your own research is the website pepgateway.com.au, which we'll include in the show notes.
Love it. Well, let's bring in Cameron. Well, Cameron, welcome to Equity Mates.
Thank you for having me today.
Before we jump into unpacking everything that's going on in private equity markets at the moment, it'd be great if you can just help us understand a bit about your journey in private equity.
Yeah, so I joined Pacific Equity Partners in 2002, really out of Bain & Company, which is a strategy consulting, which is an important part of the story of PEP, because we actually started within the Bain & Company office. We were set up effectively by Bain Capital in 1998. And the whole idea behind Bain Capital and PEP was to put capital behind strategy consulting. So rather than just consulting for time and materials, it was about actually buying the companies and implementing that strategy, and seeing that value uplift that came from that implementation, as a capital participant rather than rather than a consultant.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. 1998 turned out to be a great time to start a private equity firm because the past two decades have been pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Private markets have outperformed public markets and there's been some pretty amazing results. Tell us a bit about that story and some of the numbers behind the private markets growth.
Yeah, so well, I think it all comes down to outperformance of the public market. So if you look at on an average basis, private equity outperforms public markets on average by about 5% per annum. So that's on an average. If you actually start to really look at the best managers in the world, that outperformance goes to 10 or 15%. So, wow. You know, if you're seeing, public markets perform in that sort of 8 to 10% range over the long term, private equity is more in the 20% plus at the top end, the best managers. So, that outperformance is real, and it has, as you've said, been sustained over two decades.
So, like rough numbers, you're doubling your money every 3 to 4 years rather than like 7 to 8
That's
years.
That's correct. That's exactly right.
Yeah, geez, that compounds.
Yes, it really does.
We need a podcast, private equity, mates.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. All right, we'll take that offline. Yeah. Maybe you can co-host with us.
Yeah.
So, Cameron, I guess the question that follows then is, what do you actually attribute this outperformance to?
I think it's really clear. It's actually a better governance model. So if you can imagine what happens, and I've sat on some public company boards as well, it becomes a real division between shareholders, board and management. And you have a lot of discussions at a board level that aren't really about, creating value. They're actually about checking boxes and, remuneration committees and all these types of things. And obviously the shareholders are one step removed, from the management as well. That doesn't exist in private equity. We have a very, very direct line with the management of our companies we own. And, there's a really strong alignment with our management team. So it's about setting strategy, giving management access to capital and letting them go and execute that strategy. And it's a very clear model, and that is very clearly what drives that outperformance. I think there's another aspect of the public markets that's important to talk about. One of them is this quarterly or six monthly reporting, and also that the companies are there forever. So they sort of actually are stuck between this world of short-termism and forever, where with a private equity company, we tend to have a time frame of 4 or 5 years. And so it means that you take a medium-term view, like a project view. So you're not really worried about the next 6 months, but you also realise that at some point you will sell the business. So you have a project plan to transform a business over a period of time. So that governance model and that time frame that you can take, a bit of a longer term view, but not a forever view, really is what drives that, considerable outperformance in the private markets.
I can just already feel in myself get super excited about private equity by the end of this interview, because both of those things make so much sense. Yeah. Like, especially the governance structure. I never really thought of that. But now I'm just thinking about the shortcomings of the public markets governance structure.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I think the public markets, make a lot of sense for the big banks and big regulated businesses and the like, but for a lot of your sort of medium-sized companies that are on the ASX or even the smaller companies on the ASX, they probably shouldn't really be there. Mm-hmm. They're not really set up in a way that's conducive to fast, good decision-making.
Yeah. So despite this outperformance, private markets have been a little bit more inaccessible and just, haven't been front of mind for a lot of investors for the past couple of decades. And that's led to an underexposure both in individual investors and in a lot of institutions. Yeah. Talk to us about that underexposure. Just how underexposed is the average investor?
Yeah, so I think the institutional, the large global institutions are actually sort of have about 40 to 50% of their portfolio in the private markets. It's actually substantial.
Yeah, wow.
When you then come all the way down to, individuals, you're less than 5%, sometimes zero. Why is that? I think there's obviously an awareness element of that, but also, you are investing in managers, so there's a lack of sort of transparency in terms of who are the good managers. So there's a sort of a manager selection challenge that an individual has. But also, you know, when you're going into these private equity funds, traditionally your money's been locked up for 10 years. And that's a very difficult thing for an individual to commit to because, you know, life circumstance change and all those sorts of things. You do want access to liquidity. So it's really those combinations, you know, that have really caused particularly the individuals to be, you know, massively under-allocated to the private markets compared to the public market or compared to institutional shareholders. And I think, you know, there's some really interesting stats around the place. It's only about 2% of companies are public. 98% of companies are actually private, which makes sense when you think about, you know, the way that business and industry actually works. And so, you know, an individual that's only got public market exposure is actually exposed to a very small subset of the companies. And so you can see from an institutional investor perspective, you know, looking for diversity, it makes a lot of sense for them to have a big exposure in private markets.
Awareness is definitely increasing, though. As I think we do every year a bit of a check-in on how many companies are IPOing, and it's just getting less and less each year because more of them are staying in private for longer and then just getting scooped up by all the big private equity firms. So us as retail investors can't get them.
It does grind our gears when we see companies get taken off the boards, like good companies get taken off the boards. I'm like, damn, well, there goes that opportunity.
And you're seeing some real concentration, particularly in the Australian you know, public markets. You know, you've got the big banks and resource companies dominating the indexes. So you've got a sort of really, you know, you've just had a bunch of building materials, you know, in Boral maybe going or CSR going. So the sort of universe, available universe in the public markets is decreasing.
And now, like, now super funds are doing it. Like, you know, like Sydney Airport gets taken off the board. It's, anyway, that's a complete conversation.
It goes back to this, governance issue that we were talking about.
Well, let's turn to Pacific Equity Partners. It's Australasia's largest private equity firm. Give us a bit of an overview of the track record over the last 20 years.
Yeah, so look, we've as I spoke about earlier, we got going in 1998, and if you just look at our returns, you know, over that period of time, it sits at about a gross IRR of about 41%.
Yeah, I saw that number, and I was and oh,
it's look, it's a net return of mid-20s. So you know, we do. It's not. We don't work for free, but you know, we do, and are very conscious that, you know, delivering those sorts of returns over a long period of time to our investors has meant that we've got a very loyal following. It's not been without ups and downs over periods of time, so we're not infallible. But, you know, it's a pretty consistent track record that we've got. And, you know, we also understand that investors love making money, but they also hate losing money. So, you know, we do take a pretty conservative approach to the way that we invest. And we're generally doing, you know, late stage private equity. So these are big established businesses. It's not startups or growth capital. It's late stage private equity that we focus on.
Well, we'd love to get an understanding of your process, Cameron, and really get some insight into how you guys go in and create value for all the shareholders. We've asked you to come with a bit of a case study, and you've shared IntelliHub.
IntelliHub,
So let's start from the top. What is IntelliHub? When did you first identify it as a company to target?
Yeah, so IntelliHub's Australia's largest smart metering business. So this is, you know, its role in the energy transition is going into, you know, homes around Australia. It's already in about 2 million homes, putting a box on the wall in your meter box that communicates back to the cloud and actually means you don't have to have meter readers going around the street. So our clients at IntelliHub are the big energy retailers, so think Origin, AGL and the like, and we're you know, putting those boxes on the wall and then feeding the data back to them for billing. So that's what IntelliHub does at its core. How we identified this business sort of back in 2016-17, we knew that some new legislation was coming through in the market to make it the retailer's responsibility to look after metering. Prior to some legislation that went through in 2017, that was actually the responsibility of the network companies, so the distributors, so think of Ausgrid and Endeavour and the like, and that legislation changed it to the retailer's responsibility. But we knew that the big retailers couldn't actually wouldn't want to look after that responsibility. They would want to outsource it because customers churn from AGL to Origin, and AGL doesn't want Origin looking after their meters. So we were very fortunate. We knew that Origin were thinking about divesting their smart metering business. We had good connectivity into the Origin senior management and board. We started to knock on their door well before we ended up acquiring, probably a year campaign of asking them whether they were ready to sell. We got some very strong feedback from them that they didn't want to sell to a purely financial buyer. They wanted somebody with expertise. So we actually teamed up with the world's largest smart metering manufacturer called Landis+ Gear. And it was actually a co-bid that we went and put, a co-proposal that we went and put to Origin. So we were the only financial sponsor, if you like, in that process. So they ran a very limited party process with a couple of other trade participants, and we were fortunate enough to be successful in that process.
We were going to ask about the process, and you mentioned there you had some good connections in with senior management. That always helps.
Yeah.
It was still a bidding process. Yeah. You still had to pitch them.
I think the reality, in particularly when we're buying big businesses, and a lot of what we do at PEP are corporate carve-outs. The big corporates, they do want to make sure that, they're not doing sweetheart deals with people. They've had a little bit of, competitive tension in their processes to divest their assets. But it's also about having a track record of successfully carving businesses out. It is very important to those big corporates that they are selling to a party who's going to do the right thing by their customers or their people and all that type of thing. So we've got, a 26-year track record where 50% of the deals that we've done are corporate carve-outs. So, walked into that type of situation quite often where, there's some trepidation dealing with, a purely financial buyer of assets and them looking a bit silly or all those types of things. Mm. So, I think we've just developed, a way to engage with them. Obviously, we're ex-consultants in Bain & Company, so we sort of understand how big corporates work. And how to engage with them. So I think that puts us into a bit of a unique place where they don't run a really large auction, they'll run a limited party type process.
Mm. So you pick up the business in 2017?
It was actually 2018.
It took some time. What's been the story from there? You've now got this streamlined governance structure.
Yeah.
What have you done?
Well, when we picked it up, it was actually a loss-making business. The real attraction for us, it came with a 20-year contract to roll out another 1 million metres with Origin Energy. So it was really the contract that had the value within it. And we had to work very hard and put a lot of money into technology and software development to really build the business into a really high quality standalone business that could provide services to other people other than just Origin. So that was the start of the journey. So it took us 2 or 3 years to really get that humming. We won a lot more contracts. We also went over to New Zealand and did a corporate carve out of Mercury Energy's smart metering business called Metric, put that together with the one that we'd bought with Origin. So that was a big heavy lifting establishment of a business, all the processes that go around that, and that was that 3-year journey. So I can continue to talk about IntelliHub for a long time. So maybe we can move on to the next phase.
Well, what was the next phase?
Yeah, so well, the next phase. So look, the next phase was we realised that there was just a very long runway with IntelliHub. Every Australian home needs to be have a smart meter in it by the end of this decade. That means there's another 6 million homes to visit.
Is that a law?
It is getting passed right now. Okay. It's already been sort of it's getting legislated, but it's already been sort of passed as it's going to happen. So by 2030, everybody has to have a smart meter. So it's a massive, a massive rollout that's coming. It's a little bit like the NBN, effectively, right? We went searching for a very deep-pocketed partner. So We ran a limited party process.
Sorry, aren't you the deep pocketed miner?
Well, we found another one that was even deeper because there's an awful lot of capital. So, we were very fortunate to select Brookfield as our partner in IntelliHub. Yeah. They're a $1 trillion manager.
Deep-pocketed.
They're very deep-pocketed. And they've got, great expertise and connectivity. We recapitalised the business at $3.3 billion. We sold 50% as a partnership to Brookfield, and then we took the other 50% pool of capital and put the other half of IntelliHub into that vehicle. In our industry, it's called a single asset continuation vehicle. And really the idea behind that was to line up with the timeframes that Brookfield, so we had equal ownership and we had equal timeframes. So it was a very logical thing to put the business together that way. And we continue to own half of it. I continue to be the chairman of the company, and we continue to grow it. And it's just going from strength to strength in IntelliHub. So hopefully we'll be bringing it back to market in a number of years' time and even a larger format than we went in.
I was going to ask about the timing of it there, because you sort of mentioned a lot of private equity deals, you're thinking medium term, maybe like, what, 5 to 7 years?
Yeah.
The law was out till 2030 that you're mentioning, and then you mentioned the 20-year contract with Origin.
That's
so
right.
How do you think about those different durations? And I guess if you buy a great asset, you don't want to sell.
That's right. And that's really where this innovation of single asset continuation vehicles has come from. We do tend to want to crystallise for our investors their returns after that sort of 3, 4, 5 year period. So these really are vehicles to enable you to provide a liquidity opportunity for existing investors if they so choose to take them, but then double down and keep going again on your trophy, star assets that you have, because it's hard to find good assets. So when you're on a winner and you can see another horizon of growth, this is a great way to double down and continue to go again.
Over the 20 years that you've been in business, pumping out gross 40% returns, the process that you just went through sounds incredibly intense and a lot of work. How many deals are you running in parallel, or how many deals are you actually, engaging in over that period of time?
Yeah, well, we look at about 100 deals a year, and that sounds like a lot, and it is a lot. But we filter out probably 50 or 60 of those pretty quickly. They just sort of don't fit our criteria. We look like looking at, market leaders, in pretty stable industries. So, once you filter out a lot, you probably end up with maybe 40 that you do a little bit of work on.
Right.
And then, you might really get engaged on 20 of those, and you're doing sort of full due diligence on, a dozen a year, and you may be, executing on, 3 or 4 a year type of thing. So it's a big filtering process, and it is very time intensive, and you do need a big team to be able to, continue to look at those types of opportunities.
Of that 100, is a lot of it you going out with, we have identified this as the opportunity, like you did with IntelliHub, or what's the difference between inbound and outbound?
Oh, look, it's a little bit more messy than that, I think, is the reality. And we've been in the market for 26 years. So, obviously we're a very well-known player in the capital markets. We do have a lot of people, walking through our door, putting ideas in front of us all the time. And obviously we're forming up our ideas about, what to look for. So, in the IntelliHub example, we've actually done a number of investments in the energy industry over that 26 years. So, we were sort of familiar with the businesses that were moving. And so it's a little bit of a combination of both.
So just hearing you talk about those single asset continuation vehicles, all it makes me think is they are a perfect candidate to return to the listed markets and a way to give people like us access to some of these assets.
Yeah, I think, it's a great question. And I think traditionally there's been three ways for private equity to monetize their investments, if you like. One is to sell it to a big trader once you've got an asset. One is to sell to a big trade buyer. Another one is to IPO and bring it into the public markets. Or you could sell it to another financial sponsor like ourselves. So these single asset continuation funds are like a fourth path where you actually create your own vehicle to move an asset from a commingled fund into a single asset fund. So there's no doubt that it does give yet another path for private equity not to bring companies to the public markets. I think we're still very open to IPOing our businesses if the asset sort of suits that environment and the market's positive and the like, or receptive to our asset. So, it's important when we own an asset that we do have multiple pathways to liquidity for our investors.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Well, let's turn to the gateway product. Before we kind of jump into it, there's a bit of jargon there. You've said single asset continuation funds.
Yes.
Not a common term that we get in equity markets.
No.
So can you help the audience understand what that means?
Yeah, so these are relatively new even into the private equity market. They started about 10 years ago in the US, like a lot of innovation in the financial markets happen. And they were set up in a way for, the best private equity firms to find their best assets and to hold them longer. So that's effectively the background from them. So, I think the best way just to simplify it all, these are, the real star assets, out of the private equity world that, people want to hold and invest in for longer.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but like the traditional private equity fund is a commingled fund. So you might raise, X billion dollars and you might buy,
ten companies.
And then, so that's a commingled vehicle, and then you'll at some point sell them or IPO them, return money to investors, and then this is the single asset. It's just single one.
That's
just
right.
The stars.
And I think they end up being the star assets because to get these vehicles up and running, the incoming investors demand that you, the private equity sponsor, need to roll all your economics into the new vehicle. And that really means that you tend to just pick your star assets you really believe. So it's a doubling down opportunity, and that's why they're such an attractive asset pool. So we've done two of these. We did the very first one in Australia, which was IntelliHub. We've done a second one over a business called Up Education. So we're really the innovator in the Australian market around this space, and having done a few ourselves, we think it's a great thematic to be investing behind.
Mm. Well, the gateway product, I guess, tries to open up that thematic to more investors.
Yeah.
So tell us about this product.
Yeah. So this this really initiative from PEP started about 3 years ago. We had a lot of our ex-CEOs and management team, or lawyers and bankers and accountants that we work with all the time, asking us whether they could invest alongside of us in our funds. The problem is with our traditional institutional funds is they do have 10-year lockups and very high minimums. So we started to conceptualize.
Well, hold on, what's the standard minimum for a standard fund?
It's a $10 million minimum typically.
Yeah, so just
it's
a little.
I mean, look, we do for our family and friends lower that to sort of $1 million, but it's still.
Okay, so we should go for a beer after this thing.
But look, it's still a pretty inaccessible thing for you to have a truly diversified portfolio of private equity funds investment. Then you don't want to just have PEP, you want to have a range, and then all of a sudden to build that program, you've got to hit $1 million a lot of times.
Yeah, so you've got to be an institution.
That's why it is pretty inaccessible to individuals. So it really was born out of there, and we had a existing portfolio of investments ourselves on our own personal account. So we sort of pulled those together and started to invite our family and friends to come and invest alongside of us. But we were very acutely aware of the need for liquidity. So we structured it into an Australian managed investment trust, just like a normal managed fund with a monthly unit price where people could come in and out on a monthly basis. And, you know, the primary focus is into these all-star, you know, creating an all-star portfolio of single assets. But we also complement that with a little bit of listed private equity. So these are, you know, the funds, the big alternative asset managers in the US, like a KKR or an Ares and the like. And so within the Gateway Fund itself, there is some listed private equity as well, about 15 to 20%. And that enables us to have the liquidity, you know, to provide monthly liquidity if an individual so chooses. Obviously, you know, we're suggesting the time frame is a 3 to 5 year hold, but, you know, people's life circumstances do change. So if they do want their money back, you know, we'll return their money back. So that's the Gateway Fund. It's been going for about three years or so, and, you know, we're pretty excited about it as a new vehicle for individuals to be able to get access to, you know, really an all-star program of global private equity.
We should be clear, it's not just Pacific Equity's single continuation vehicle funds. Single asset continuation funds. But it's these funds from around the world.
So look, we're in a very fortunate place that we've been in the private equity industry for 26 years. You know, it's over a quarter of a century, and we do know who the best private equity managers are in the world. You know, we're one of them, and it's sort of a club. So we're very much in that club and able to know who the best of the best are. So the idea behind Gateway is you should have a diversified portfolio. You definitely should have some PEP, but you should have some of these other names that are the best around the world. So the idea is that we're creating a diversified portfolio of you know, all-star type assets for individual Australian investors. That's the right way to think about it. And so, yeah, it ends up being about 50% North America, about 20-30% Western Europe, and the balance into, you know, mainly into PEP, Australia, New Zealand type assets. So good diversified portfolio for people across a different range of different managers, a range of different sectors. And so we think that's important.
You mentioned there that minimums for the institutions are $10 million on your current funds, but what is it for the Gateway?
Yeah, so the Gateway fund, the minimums are only $50,000. We think that's, you know, reasonably accessible. Obviously, you need to be a wholesale investor, but you know, that's the minimums for the PB Gateway program.
Far cry from the 10, that's for sure. Well, it's good to see it slowly becoming more and more accessible to everyday investors. One day we'll get there, Ren. Now, if you're interested in the PEP Gateway, head to the website. It's pepgateway.com.au. We'll put it in the show notes. There you can find all the information about the strategy, how to invest, and also some contact information if you'd like to give Cameron a direct call.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Now, Cameron, that does bring us to the end today. We really appreciate your time. And as I said, yeah, it is great to see that slowly this is becoming an industry or a sector that's becoming more accessible.
Thank you. Look, we're really passionate about the private equity world. You know, it's certainly I've had a lot of joy and excitement sort of working in the industry for over 20 years. And I think it's really just starting to hit its straps after 20 years. You know, it's an industry that's, you know, professionalized. You know, our communications with our investors is really important. We want to make sure it's very transparent and people know exactly what we're up to. So, you know, the private in private equity is becoming less relevant. But, yeah, we look forward to hopefully you joining us as an investor.
That'll be the day.
If 41% gross returns isn't hitting your straps, then I can't wait to see what hitting your straps looks like.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Cameron.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs or objectives. Before before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. Equity Mates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.